Our Father in heaven, thank you for our Texas. Thank you for all the blessings we're enjoying living in Texas. And we ask your continued blessings on us here. I pray that you will help and protect and make wise our governor and the other people who have the government over us. I pray that all their efforts to do good, you will bless, and any ways in which they go wrong, you will cause still to work out for our good. I pray that you will bless these young people who are learning about Texas now, so that when they take their place as voters and adult citizens, the strength of Texas, that they'll be wise to make the decisions that should be made for Texas and their generations. Thank you that Peter and Jonathan get to be in our class today. I pray that what they hear today will open places in their minds for loving Texas and wanting to know more about it. Please bless Audrey so she'll get all better. In the name of Jesus, amen. Job chapter 25. Job chapter 25. Would like you please to read us verses 1 through 3. Would you three young gentlemen who are here at the table read us these verses aloud? Job chapter 25, verses 1, 2, and 3. Why don't you young gentlemen read us these things aloud in age order, oldest first.
Then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, "Dominion and fear belong to him. He makes peace in his high places.
If there is any number in his army, on him shall not his flight arise."
Amen. Thought it good, since we're talking about opposing armies and how many soldiers each army had and who were the stronger and everything, to take all of that in light of the fact that God is the one whose army is innumerable. All right, the quiz. Peter, Jonathan, do you have a piece of paper and a pencil? All right, the quiz, La Prueba. Now, the question I had a good question ready, but I decided to throw it out as too easy. I was going to ask, what was William Travis's cousin's mother's sister's maiden name? But decided that was too easy, so I didn't include that one. But I did get five other questions. Are you ready? What date did war between Texas and Mexico begin in earnest with the Battle of Gonzales? What date? Month, day, and year? What date did war between Texas and Mexico begin in earnest with the Battle of Gonzales? Second question. In December of 1835, what Mexican general surrendered to the Texians at Bihar or San Antonio? In December 1835, what Mexican general surrendered to the Texians at Bihar or San Antonio? Question number 3. What Texas hero led the attack on Bihar and was killed in the process? I'm going to give you 3 choices. General Edward Burleson, Colonel James Bowie, Colonel Benjamin Milam. What Texas hero led the attack on Bihar and was killed in the process? Burleson, Bowie, or Milam? Fourth question. What were the 2 armed uniformed companies called which were organized at New Orleans and which helped in the assault on Bihar? The 2 armed uniformed companies organized at New Orleans and arrived in time to help with the attack on San Antonio. What were they called? One more question. In the consultation at San Felipe in November 1835, to what office was Stephen F. Austin elected? In the consultation at San Felipe, November 1835, to what office was Stephen F. Austin elected? If you forget the exact words used and manage to express the idea correctly, then it could possibly be considered right. Okay, friends. The correct answer to the first question, what date did the war between Texas and Mexico begin in earnest with the Battle of Gonzales?
October 2nd, 1835.
What general surrendered at San Antonio?
General Cos.
Boo. What Texas hero led the attack?
Colonel Benjamin Milam.
All right. What were those 2 companies called?
The Grays.
Yes, a very sophisticated allusion to what?
Their uniform color.
Right. And Stephen F. Austin was not elected governor or commander-in-chief of the army. He was elected
commissioner
to the United States. That's the idea. All right. The assignment for next time. Study class notes, of course, from today's lesson. Study your timeline. And read the next chapter in our book, Volume 2, Chapter 2. I hope you found your way to Volume 2, Chapter 1 this week. If you need it, I have copied the link to Chapter 2 in the notes at this point, and I'll hopefully put that online as usual. Now, some review of our timeline. Now, what I thought we'd do today is that every student will have to stand on his head and say the timeline backward in French. Ready?
I don't think any of us know French.
Just kidding. I have here a partial deck of cards. I have removed all the cards numbering number 9 or higher. I have the aces, which will count as ones. And so each person will draw a card. And if, for example, you draw a 4, then you say the next 4 items on the timeline. If you draw an 8, I think that's the highest card, you say the next 8 items. Okay. if you succeed, you get to keep the card that you drew. If you mess up at all, you don't get to keep your card. And at the end of the game, whoever has the most cards wins. There are two jokers. If you draw a joker, you get to keep it without having to say any items on the timeline.
So you want jokers.
Yeah, so Jonathan could conceivably win. He might draw a joker two times. Okay.
So if you mess up at all, does it go back in the deck or just a little pile somewhere?
I guess it goes back to the bottom of the deck. Okay. Angie will, you know, when you're playing a game of cards, usually the, you know, play passes to the left of the dealer. So let's do it that way. Angie, you get to draw first. I suppose it's an advantage to go first because you'll get those ones we've had the longest, right?
Seven.
Okay. Let's hear it, Angie.
1528, debacle lands a Galveston Island. 1541, Coronado enters Texas Panhandle from the west. 1542, DeSoto Expedition enters Texas from the northeast. 1685, LaSalle lands at Matagorda Bay. 1718, San Antonio Mission, Presidio, and Villa are established. 1803, Louisiana Purchase is made. 1819, eastern border of Texas established at Sabine River.
That was seven, wasn't it? Congratulations. All right, Ava.
Two,
all right.
1821, Lord Stockton receives a grant from a colony in Texas. 1824, Mexican Federal Constitution is passed.
Okay. Are you playing, Mrs. Venick?
I'd like
to. Okay.
Eight, so just one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 1825, Baptist minister Joseph Bates begins preaching in Texas.
All right.
Begins to preach? Audrey and I have had a debate over this.
I have in my notes, begins preaching.
Okay, so she was right.
All right, Alvin, what's it going to be?
Four.
Okay.
1827, Coahuila et Tejas state constitution is passed. 1829, Lydia Alcorn makes first known public professions of faith in Christ. 1830, Bustamante takes power and pursues a narrow policy towards Texas. 1832, first Texan consultation meets at Santa Fe.
Congratulations.
Oh.
That was four, wasn't it?
I don't like the sense of this.
Captain.
Three.
Okay, that's not too many, not too few.
Let's see. Oh, that's not right.
1832, Santa Ana.
1832, Santa Ana. Which stores?
Mm-hmm.
Constitutionally elected President Pedraza.
Yep.
1833, Santa Ana becomes President of Mexico under the 1824 Constitution. 1833, again, first Texan consultation is held at San Felipe.
Second, 1833, second Texas consultation.
1833, second Texas consultation is held at San Felipe.
Proposes statehood.
Texas and St. Austin as delegate to Mexico City.
There you go. All right, I'm afraid you don't get to keep your point. Maybe next time around. Okay, Angie, you're back up.
So if we mess up, do we start where the other person left off?
That might have been a good system, but instead you have to start at the next spot.
Okay.
Like Caden just did the one about Second Texas Consultation, so you can go on from there.
Okay.
Seven.
No. 1834. Stephen F. Austin is arrested and imprisoned in Mexico City. 1835, Stephen F. Austin returns to Texas in September. 1835,
war between Texas and Mexico begins at the Battle of Gonzales, October 2nd.
It, officially, it begins with the Battle of Gonzales. And I, you know, if I had not said something right at the beginning of this game, exactly, that probably could have been allowed. You know, begins with the Battle of Gonzales, begins at the Battle of Gonzales, is to say the same thing. But right before the game started, I did say exactly.
Well, she corrected herself. She's spoken up with your self-correction. So I guess
that has to not count. That's a shame because you were doing really great, and it's such a minor error. All right, Ava, you've got the chance to win it right here.
So if I can say the one she messed up on, or if I
you go on to the next one.
The next one?
There's not a next one.
No.
Sorry. I've got two to add, and they're right here on my paper. Oh, so... So everybody who got one is tied then for first.
I'll take one.
Well, you guys, I'll have to admit, the draw cards thing wasn't really all that interesting compared with the roll the dice one, which was more. Well, congratulations for every one of those that you all got right. Thank you. Okay. I have two new ones for you. You know, everything's in 1835 for a while. We'll get to 1836 eventually. You know, no more skipping 100 years in between.
May take it to 2023.
Right. At 1:35 in the afternoon. All right, 1835, Third Texas Consultation meets at San Felipe, November 3rd.
Did you want to say Texas instead of Texian?
Oh, man. I never have decided. I have in my notes Texas, so let's say that. 1835, Third Texas Consultation meets at San Felipe, November 3rd. 1835, Third Texas Consultation meets at San Felipe, November 3rd.
November
3rd. Remember, it was called for the 1st, but then they couldn't come on the 1st because they were with the army, postponed to the 3rd.
That's why I said 1st Texas Consultation, because they get this.
Yep. And another item, 1835, the Mexican army surrenders Bihar to the Texians, December 10th. 1835, the Mexican army surrenders Bihar to the Texians, December 10th. 1835, the Mexican army, El Mexican army, surrenders Bihar to the Texians, December 10th. Now, let me set this in the middle of the table, so if anybody wants to look at it, you're welcome to. So today's lesson is going to be in the year 1835, of course, in the months of November and December. Okay? You place yourself there in your mind. 1835, November and December.
It's getting cold.
Starting to get cool. And two events. The Third Texas Consultation. And where is it being held?
San Felipe.
And the siege of San Antonio, or Bihar. So, first, the third Texas consultation at San Felipe. Remember, November 1st was when they were supposed to meet, but not enough of them were there. I'm sorry, they were supposed to meet, remember, they were supposed to meet October 15th. Then they postponed it to November 1st. But then on November 1st, not enough of them were there. There were a lot of them still on the way. And so on the 3rd, November 3rd, the general consultation formally convened. And they elected a president, not a president of Texas. Texas wasn't a country yet, but just somebody to preside at the meeting. Branch T. Archer. Branch T. Archer, president of the 3rd Texian consultation. You can picture that. A nice quiz question. No, do you? Did that come up in our textbook? I don't remember.
I remember it's ideated.
November 7th, they adopted a declaration, but not a Declaration of Independence. You might have read in our textbook, to everyone, the need for independence from Mexico seemed inevitable, but not all of the Texians were aware of that and ready to declare that just yet. And the people of Texas really needed other countries of the world to approve of what they were doing. And they needed to demonstrate they are willing to submit to the Mexican government if only it will be constitutional. So what they did was they declared for the 1824 Constitution. Okay, I happen to have reproduced their declaration, and I will hereby read it to you. What? For the Constitution. The 1824 Constitution, of course. Yep. Declaration of the People of Texas in General Convention Assembled. Whereas General Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna and other military chieftains have by force of arms overthrown the federal institutions of Mexico and dissolved the social compact which existed between Texas and the other members of the Mexican Confederacy, now the good people of Texas, availing themselves of their natural rights, solemnly declare, first, that they have taken up arms in defense of their rights and liberties, which were threatened by the encroachments of military despots, and in defense of the republican principles of the Federal Constitution of Mexico of 1824. In defense of two things. First, their rights and liberties. Second, the republican principles of the Constitution. Okay, that was the first item in the declaration. Second, that Texas is no longer morally or civilly bound by the Compact of Union, yet, stimulated by the generosity and sympathy common to a free people, they offer their support and assistance to such of the members of the Mexican Confederacy as will take up arms against military despotism. Texas no longer morally or civilly bound by the Compact of Union. So they're saying that at this point, they're not obligated to stay with the other Mexican states as a republic. Enough has already been violated that they're not obligated to that. But they're offering to join with any of the other states that will to fight and restore their republic. Third, that they do not acknowledge that the present authorities of the nominal Mexican Republic have the right to govern within the limits of Texas. Santa Anna, anybody he appoints, will say that they are the government of Mexico and therefore of Texas. But the good people of Texas do not acknowledge that those people actually have the right to govern. You understand that concept that just because somebody says he is the government, if he's not duly chosen to it, if he has usurped authority, if he's taken office that he doesn't have the right to, then the good people of Texas might not acknowledge that he has the right to govern within Texas. Okay, fourth, that they will not cease to carry on war against the said authorities whilst their troops are within the limits of Texas. If there's any Mexican troops in Texas under the authority of the present illegitimate government, Texas will not stop fighting them. Okay? Fifth, that they hold it to be their right during the disorganization of the federal system and the reign of despotism to withdraw from the Union, to establish an independent government, or to adopt such measures as they may deem best calculated to protect their rights and liberties, but that they will continue faithful to the Mexican government so long as that nation is governed by the Constitution and laws that were formed for the government of the political association. While the federal system is disorganized and unconstitutional, we have the right to withdraw, to form an independent government. They're not declaring independence, but they are declaring that they have the right to become independent if Mexico will not abide by its constitution. Okay, sixth, that Texas is responsible for the expense of her armies now in the field. Seventh, that the public faith of Texas is pledged for the payment of any debts contracted by her agents. You understand that Texas has got very little money. The new government, the provisional temporary government that's being formed, has virtually no money. They're going to be asking for loans. And so they're declaring that we do consider ourselves responsible to pay it back. You can loan to us, and we will be paying it back. Eighth, that she will reward by donations in lands, all who volunteer their services in her present struggle and receive them as citizens. Because you know, Texas doesn't have any money. What do they have? Land. They got more land than they've got people who can do anything with it. And so if anybody's going to come and volunteer to fight for us or loan us or give us supplies, we will, at the end of this, repay you in land.
Now I have all the lands owned.
Yeah. Now, here is something that you might enjoy hearing. These declarations we solemnly avow to the world and call God to witness their truth and sincerity, and invoke defeat and disgrace upon our heads should we prove guilty of duplicity. Despots and despotism is mentioned in this document. Despotism is when somebody rules not according to the Constitution or the laws or the traditions, but just rules according to whatever he wants to do. Arbitrary rule by the will of those in power rather than by constitution or laws or traditions. You know, for example, I joked at the beginning of class, okay, we're going to do the timeline by every student has to stand on his head and say the timeline backward in French. Well, you understand, if I actually ordered you all to do that, that would be despotism. Because it is not at all in keeping with how schools are run or classes are taught or students are tested to make them stand on their head and say their lesson backward in a foreign language. That is not at all traditional. That's not in the bylaws of the of this school or in the traditions of classroom education. That would be despotism. If I then started punishing anybody who wouldn't do it, if I started giving beatings or issuing fines of $100 or saying you couldn't have lunch next week or something, then that would make it not only despotism, but tyranny, right? Despotism when imposed with harsh penalties is then tyranny. Sometimes people use despotism and tyranny as synonyms. That's, you know, pretty common usage. But if you want to get technical, that's the difference or the distinction. So that's despotism. Someone who does like that is a despot. Actions that are like that are despotic. Despotism, despot, despotic. And so that's what the people of Texas were talking about, that. Military despots, military, you know, the army, the navy, the armed forces, military despots, military despotism. So they said that they are taking up arms in defense of military despots, military despotism. Okay? And so what they wrote is all very similar to what you read in the writings of the American Patriots in the 1760s and 1770s, very much like what you can read in the Declaration of Independence, you know, among those things, very much like things you'll find in the U.S. Constitution. Yes, miss?
You don't mean in the defense of despotism, do you?
Defense against.
Right. Sorry. Defense against. Defense of their rights and liberties, they say. And in defense of the Republican principles of the Constitution. Yeah. Thank you. If I ever say something totally backward, making it not make any sense, I appreciate students helping me realize it. So there you go. There's the actual declaration that is summarized by saying the Third Texian Consultation adopted a declaration not of independence, but of adherence to the 1824 Constitution. Still 1835, still November, still at San Felipe, still the Third Texian Consultation, November 13th. They established a provisional government, some way for Texas to govern itself while the Mexican constitutional government has been overthrown. And they decided to have a governor, a lieutenant governor, and a council of 12 members, so that they would be representing all of the towns that had sent delegates to the consultation. Henry Smith was elected governor. So, you know, later when Texas becomes a state in these United States of America, you know, you'll be able to say the first governor of Texas was so-and-so, but the first governor of Texas at all was Henry Smith. Henry Smith, elected governor. Commander-in-chief of the army, guess who? Sam Houston, yes. Sam Houston, commander-in-chief of the army. And and Stephen F. Austin, and I think two others, commissioners to the United States of America.
There's three others.
Okay.
No, there's three altogether.
To go to the U.S. and borrow money, raise support, establish diplomatic relations, do whatever they could to get foreign support for what they were doing. Henry Smith, elected governor of Texas in the provisional government, gave a speech, an inaugural address, being inaugurated to that office. And I will read you the conclusion, just the last few lines of the Governor Henry Smith inaugural address. I conclude, gentlemen, by expressing the hope that the supreme ruler of nations will smile upon your counsel, and that by our united efforts we will be enabled to place Texas in a situation to become what the God of nature designed her to be, a land of liberty and of laws, of agriculture and of commerce, the pride and support of our lives, and a legacy of price unspeakable to posterity. We like that he made reference to God. He made reference to God not in a distinctly Christian, biblical way, but in a way that is more in keeping with the political writing of people of that generation and before. This is the kind of language you'd hear George Washington using, the supreme ruler of nations. Of course, there's a lot in the Bible demonstrating that. God did a lot and said a lot through the prophets to make us aware of that. You can think of the things that went on in, that are written down in Daniel. You know, the visions that he gave to those kings and to Daniel himself of God knowing all about what empires were going to rise and fall, and God ruling all over all of that, the supreme ruler of nations. And then he referenced what the God of nature designed Texas to be, a land of liberty and of laws, of agriculture and of commerce. I'm not in his head. I'm not sure exactly what he was thinking, but I think the idea is that God made mankind and made the world, the earth for us to live in, and made it to where it always will be right on the earth for people to be in liberty, not oppressed by despots, and to have good laws based on things like thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not steal, and that there should be agriculture and commerce. Agriculture meaning, you know, like farming. Mm-hmm. Farming and ranching and gardening and that kind of thing. And commerce, you know, buying and selling, having goods transported from where they're produced to where they need to be purchased and that kind of thing. The pride and support of our lives. I don't think it was a good development to talk about pride in a positive sense. Pride in the Bible is always talked about in a sinful way. He says the pride and support of our lives, Texas, the support of our lives, so that the things that we need, we derive from the activities that we do here. We need to eat, you know. So we farm and we ranch and we garden, you know, we need some place to live. We build our house here, et cetera. Support of all, and a legacy. Legacy referring to something that you leave for people who come later. It's something that to the people of now, the legacy is what was produced in the past and you have it now. When you're talking about your legacy, you mean what you're doing now that will leave something for your, for the people who come after you, a legacy of price unspeakable to posterity. So posterity to people in 1835, that's us. Here we are, and it's not 200 years later, but close. And so Henry Smith was thinking that Texas, if God would bless their efforts, if God would smile upon their counsel, and help them to set Texas as it should be, as God intends the world to be, with liberty and laws and agriculture and commerce, then Texas would be a legacy of price unspeakable. So let's think about that. Let's just take ourselves sitting here. We now have Texas. I don't mean that, you know, any one of us owns the whole thing, but I mean, here we are in Texas. And Texas and what you enjoy here in Texas, how well off you are, how much you, to what degree you are at liberty, would you say that it is, that's valuable to you? You know, you're not in Canada where the government is just imposing everything on you and there's nothing you can do about it. And if you try to do something about it, you just get arrested. You know, that's not where you are. You're not in China where if you're not the right ethnicity and the right political party, then you might just be put in a work camp or killed or worse. You're in Texas where on the Lord's Day, you and your family can go to church wherever you want to or not at all, and the government won't bother you about any of that. On a Tuesday, you can be at public school or a private school or a cooperative like this or at home. You can educate your children in whatever manner you please. If you are white or black or whatever skin color, you won't be put in jail because of what color you are. Things like that. When you turn 16, if you follow all the procedures, you can get your driver's license. And it'd be better if you could just drive freely. But it doesn't matter whether you are black or white, whether your name is, you know, Smith or Gonzalez or whatever. If you do the procedures, you get the license. That kind of way to live, is that of any value to you? You know, if somebody said, hey, I'll give you $10 and you can switch and live in Canada. They're like, no way. You know, well, how about this? I'll give you $10,000 and you can go live in China. You know, no way. As a matter of fact, as you start making the price go up, I'm not sure where I would break. I'm not sure I ever would. You know, if somebody said, hey, I've got a cushy job for you in Saudi Arabia. Of course, you won't be able to, you know, go to church. Your wife will have to, you know, cover her whole body in black. And you better not say anything that is critical of the king or you might get beheaded. But you can make $1 million there next year. Well, you know, I'm pretty sure I would not budge. So anyway, I'm offering this. I'm trying to explain this enough for you to make a good evaluation of what Henry Smith said, that if God would bless their efforts, then Texas would end up being a legacy of price unspeakable to posterity, to the people who came later. And I think we agree that's exactly what it is. It has become a legacy of price unspeakable. Okay, we got to go down the road to San Antonio or Bihar, right? The Siege of San Antonio. This is also in November, but we're fast forwarding a little bit in November, toward the end of November. Consultation was the first half of November. siege of San Antonio has been, you know, progressing. They've been getting there. Near the end of November, you know, Stephen F. Austin resigned from being commander of chief of the army, which he didn't want to be anyway and knew he wasn't going to be that good at. But he had been elected to it. Now he's been elected to something else, to be commissioner to the U.S. So he leaves, and Edward Burleson, who had been a colonel, was elevated to the rank of general. He's now general of that army, that Texian army there, numbering approximately 1,000 people. Now, the Mexican army was fortifying San Antonio, setting up breastworks across some of the main streets. Your breast, a breastwork, something that you set up as a temporary wall so that you can crouch behind it or you can raise above it to fire. They were building breastworks. They installed some of their pieces of artillery at good places in the town. And they numbered, reports were that they numbered somewhere around 800 soldiers, approximately the same number as the Texians. And Stephen F. Austin, a very cautious person and with little military experience, decided if we tried to attack now, we might succeed, but at awful loss of life. He was not at all of a mind to send everybody attacking only to have half of them killed. And so he was not attacking, but besieging, surrounding the place and intercepting people coming and going so that food and things couldn't be brought in. So there was a loose siege around San Antonio, but not an attack.
Yes, a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the only real Mexican army presence in Texas at this point?
Yes. I think our text said that there was a few soldiers at some other small place, but this was basically it. Right. And so then when General Burleson came to be in command, he was in the same position. Did not order an attack because he perceived that it could probably only be done at great loss of life. But the army, which was all just, it was just volunteers who had come in. A lot of them were deciding to just go home. If there's no need for us here, we're leaving, or whatever else sentiment they had.
They grew impatient.
Mm-hmm. So eventually there was a meeting at which General Burleson, did not decide to attack, but one of the colonels, Benjamin Milam, however he said that, decided to volunteer to lead an attack by volunteers. And right in front of, our author said, in front of General Burleson and with his approbation, meaning with his approval, he famously said, "Who will go with old Ben Milam into San Antonio?" And hundreds of the Texians volunteered. So they got together late that night at the mill, and early in the morning on December 5th, the attack on San Antonio began, led by Colonel Ben Milam. Very few Texians ended up getting killed during this battle. However, Colonel Milam was one who was killed. You read about that in your text. He was shot in the head while he was moving from one place of cover to another.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in it, it was saying that in the Texian camp, there was a big division and people were really mad at each other or something. I wasn't exactly sure what was going on that was causing that.
That it seemed like if nothing had happened to stop it, they might have actually gone to fighting each other. over whether to attack or whether to continue the siege or whether to disperse or whether to join in the expedition that somebody was trying to get together down to Matamoros. What were you going to say?
I thought that was after. Would they be invited?
I think it was before, while they were waiting to see what they were going to do about San Antonio. Colonel Frank Johnson, Frank W. Johnson, was elected colonel to replace Ben Milam when he was killed. I think the author wants us to remember that person's name because he's the person who then actually presided over General Koss's surrender.
What was the name again?
Frank W. Johnson. You read in your text about the house-to-house fighting that the Texians had to do. This went on several days there in that first week of December. The nature of the fighting was similar to what we had read about other times. The Mexican army seems to have been armed with a few cannon and with muskets, smooth bore guns that cannot be fired accurately at very much distance at all. The Texians seemingly were armed with rifles, weapons that can be fired accurately at hundreds of yards. And the Mexican soldiers, however valiant they may have been, apparently were not able to fire accurately at any distance at all. And so just like what you read of in several of the other battles, the Texians lost very few men killed. The Mexicans lost, I think, didn't our author say 150 or something like that? The Mexicans could not even make good use of their artillery because the Texians would simply kill the artillery crews with rifle fire. So that even though the Mexicans were seemingly better armed, actually the Texians were more effective with their arms. So that although the fighting went on, the author keeps saying there was a lot of fire from the Mexicans. It's just that they weren't able to fire accurately. And so the Texians won this battle with very little loss of life.
Not being able to fire accurately means
right. Right. Yep. The smooth bore muskets, inside the barrel, it's just smooth. And the projectile is usually a round lead ball. And so it's pressed down in there and you fire and the ball comes out. And as soon as it comes out, it's starting to veer off from where you aimed it. And so when it's gone very far at all, it has veered off quite a bit from where you aimed it. And in the European style of warfare, where armies consisting of thousands of soldiers would march in close ranks toward each other, and then they would fire at each other, those weapons could be very effective. Because if there's a whole bunch of soldiers and your whole bunch of soldiers shoots with a whole bunch of those smoothbore muskets, you're bound to hit several of the enemy even if your aim has been off, and especially when the distance is close. But if you're talking about people who are scattered around and hiding behind things, and you are as far away as the length of a football field, there's just no way to hit anything with those old-style smoothbore muskets. And so the armies like that, when they were in that kind of environment, they could do a lot of shooting, but they would only just hit something, basically by chance every once in a while. There's no such thing as chance, but I mean at random, every once in a while.
The Mexicans say that they had the
I don't really know. I'm sorry, I don't know. The Mexicans surrendered. General Cos surrendered early in the morning, December 10th. Put out a white flag and offered to capitulate. And the surrender was accepted. And generous terms were granted by the victorious Texians under immediate command of Colonel Johnson, overall command of General Burleson. You read in your textbook the Mexican officers were allowed to keep their arms, you know, their sword and their pistol, and to take their personal possessions and to, you know, to leave with their possessions and their arms. The body of soldiers had to leave their arms, but were allowed to leave with their lives, and all had to pledge not to take up arms in Texas for the remainder of the war and to march across until they had crossed the Rio Grande out of Texas. Now, it's not just the Texians who granted generous terms of surrender like that. That was relatively common in European and American warfare in those days. So when officers would swear no longer to fight in this war and then be allowed to go, that was referred to as parole. They were paroled. Mm-hmm. You can recognize that that is a tremendous advantage as to people not simply not being killed, and it tends to encourage surrender, because if you know that the terms of surrender, if you try to surrender, they're just going to kill you. Well, then you're not going to surrender, and there's going to be a lot more people killed. But if it is common for there to be generous terms of surrender, then people will tend to surrender. This has been an advantage for the United States of America during a lot of our history, in a lot of our war making. Enemies have surrendered to us much more readily than to other enemies, and that makes it much easier to be victorious, and much easier to be victorious without as much loss of life. And our author wants us to remember that lesson in humanity that the Texians taught the Mexicans was not then learned by the Mexicans. When we have Santa Anna and his army coming back to Texas, we find them extremely inhumane to the Texian combatants, despite the humanity shown by the Texians to the Mexicans for their part. So it's a wonderful development that God has granted to Texas at this time. The Mexican army, as Mrs. Van Eck was pointing out, is completely out. And the Texians have been able to form a temporary government, and things are looking good. However, they're going to get a lot worse before they get better again. Okay, that's all for now, dear friends.